mothers.
And others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz Dufresne, hello, and Shelley Brunt.
Hello.
And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guest this week is musician and mum, Georgia Fields.
Hello.
In addition to working in industry for over a decade, in recent times she's been working to build a new mini empire, we call it, putting together the Mother Load Survey, a way to get clear numbers about the experiences of working mums in the music industry in Australia, and then to act to use their comments to make industry better. She is absolutely speaking and playing in our language. Welcome to Music Mothers and Others, Georgia. Oh,
thanks, Shelley. Thanks, Liz. Thanks for having me.
We're really pleased to have you, Georgia. Thanks for making the time. Do you mind starting off by telling us what your place is in the music and creative industries? And that can be however you see it. How do you like to think about where you live in this space?
Primarily, I'm a vocalist, a singer and a songwriter. And then I have a few other little hats that go on from time to time. I do a little bit of string arranging. I do a little bit of teaching, although I've had a break from that since my son has been born, and I'm looking to return back to that. I guess I write my own songs and I perform them under the name Georgia Fields, which is my name. And, yeah, that's pretty much me. And I juggle that with caring for our kids and family life.
Awesome. And I hope we got that right, because in kind of putting together the places it's been around, you're well over a decade that you've been releasing music and making music as well as teaching other people. Is that right?
That's right. It's kind of crazy to think of that, but it is. Yeah, I put my first EP out in 2007. So I've done a few EPs, two albums, and I'm working slowly on my third, which I'm really enjoying the process of now, even though it's a lot slower than I would like.
And is that just because of all the other hats, or is it that the muse is taking a bit of time to arrive?
The songs are written, but it's mainly funding. Being an independent, got to fund it myself. So, in my 20s, I could work my tush off and put all my money into it, and I could beg, borrow and steal. And I've never stolen anything, for the record, but I have, received grants and things. So you kind of, as an independent, you're self-funding things. But I guess, and I'm sure a few of your other guests have mentioned this too, when you're a mother and you're responsible for your family and you have a limited earning capacity, that kind of impacts your ability to self-fund your creative projects. But I'm readjusting the goalposts and just being okay with it.
Sure. It's funny, you mentioned stealing. Nobody steals, but I guess we've all been in a situation where you can hang around somewhere and just maybe use a microphone, or maybe use an open channel or something like that, which I guess is the things that maybe you can't do anymore when your time's limited. Forget limited funds. It's limited time too, right?
Yes, time is money. Time is a resource. And I remember we were talking about, my husband and I were talking years ago about someone or something, or us, or I can't remember what we were saying, but we were talking about being time poor. Mm. And he said, is there any other type of poor? Like, your time is just so valuable. I mean, there is, but, yeah, it's a thing.
Do you find then, Georgia, that you're really careful with how you choose to do your time to make music? Like, are you to plan out in advance, or is it just something that fits around your life, or is it something that is a priority?
I said to Liz earlier, actually, that my life is very ad hoc, and she said that was a what did you describe?
It's a very good euphemism for chaos. I'm going to use it. I hope you don't mind me saying.
Please do. It's ad hoc chaos. So I plan my week for when I'm going to, do the washing and what the kids are doing and what various commitments me and my husband have, and to work it out. And I do end up fitting my creative life around my family life, because I guess I feel like it's a little bit more flexible. I've always been better with a deadline, so it's good for me to have things booked in, because otherwise it just sort of can fall behind the by the wayside. But then again, I'm also very stubborn, and I think that's one of the reasons why I've managed to keep music going while having kids, because I've just was like, no, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Even though it's incredibly exhausting.
And how do live shows fit into that matrix that you're describing? Is that like, a, you know, if you're doing a live show, is that like, okay, I'm committing to this, this is happening, and I've got to rehearse before then, and then the gig is taking place, there's, you know, there's tickets on sale. Is that how live music works for you too, or is it just something that, oh, maybe I should do a gig, I think I'll book it?
Gigging is very much, it's twofold, I guess. So it's something that I really need to do, well, I'm going to say threefold. I need to play live for my mental health, I've realised, especially in the last year that we've had where that was gone, because I'm in Melbourne and the lockdowns essentially followed my maternity leave lockdown, where I didn't do any gigs or leave the house very much at all. So it was a very long time for me not to be playing, and I realised that my mental health was in the toilet, and that was partly to do with that. Gigging also is just a way for me to earn money that's kind of semi-easy, because, you know, if my husband's home, I don't need to get at night, I don't need to get a babysitter, and it's a little bit more flexible than, say, a regular you must be at work at 9 a.m. type situation. So it's kind of it's a money earner, it's a mental health thing. But it's also a really important way for me to a deadline for creative pursuits, for finishing songs, for rehearsing. But since I've been focusing more on getting an album together, I haven't been pushing the gigs so much. Although I have done a few, yeah.
But that makes sense though too, isn't it? Because I guess the industry, it doesn't have to be live music. Well, nobody's been able to gig live in the last year. That it's whether or not there's still that participation, you know, is still able to happen and what that looks like. So
that's so right, Liz, yeah. And also, I mean, there's people that say they much prefer recording and they hate, you know, playing live, or they find that that's just a necessary part of sharing their songs, but they prefer to record it, and, you know, whereas I'm more like I just want to get out there and be singing and
get to the people.
Yeah.
I love that. That's so good.
I'm Georgia Fields and you are listening to Music, Mothers and Others.
I'm going to shift gear a tiny bit now and think about tiny little youngster Georgia when you were small and the music that really shaped your younger life. So is there any standout songs that were just that intrinsic part of your childhood or really helped create some great musical memories for you?
I mean, there's a few standout songs. I remember my dad had a copy of God Only Knows on vinyl and I played it till the machine kind of broke or the record wore out. I remember being like, it doesn't sound right. And Dad's like, I think it's worn out. I just loved it. But I can't, aside really from that memory, it's more I had a kind of pretty broad musical education from both my parents, and it was very much, I guess, melody focused. So whether that was, you know, Madonna from my mum, or my dad played me Tchaikovsky and Hank Williams and a lot of the Beatles. It was very much a like popular song from a wide kind of range, I'd say, like from country to rock and pop, yeah.
You know what's really interesting about that? When you're listening to all that stuff as you're growing up and you're noticing now that these vast things have melody in common, Do you have those little moments now? Like, do you think back to that time, or when you're teaching people, you know, when you're teaching music, does the penny ever drop for you for those bigger things with musical connections, or are you just listening to things going, no, that's just a good melody, or I just remember that person playing that thing? Are you making those bigger connections actively, do you think?
I don't know that I am really. Mm-hmm. I think I've just always probably because, in fact, I'm really putting the pieces together now, but I think Now, since you've asked that question, it's like you're my music therapist. I'm putting it together that is the, I guess, the consistent thing between my early influences as a kid, you know, because after all, you know, that stuff, it was Mariah Carey and then even some, I got into the Ramones and punk and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely am focused on melody when I'm teaching songwriting or mentoring. I feel like teaching songwriting's like, I don't know, I feel weird saying that because...
No, it's a thing. It's a thing.
I know, it's definitely a thing. I don't want to downcredit it, but I think also I've done more one-on-one stuff where people are bringing songs to you or you're creating a challenge for them and saying, okay, we're going to write in a different time signature because I haven't heard you do that or, you know, this is your challenge rather than, you know, to write a song, sit down, get a piece of paper.
Begin with the G chord.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like songwriting craftsmanship in a way, isn't it? You're really sort of developing skills in ways that the student hasn't actually thought of before, or at least challenging them. Yeah.
Yeah, and trying to find a voice as well. Not always about, you know, it's objective. Like you can't say what is good songwriting or bad songwriting because people like different things. But I think if people are being challenged to find their voice and explore their voice and not just write the same song over and over again, then that's good songwriting. Yeah. That's my opinion.
That's really great. I like that kind of process of, you know, teaching and engaging. And I guess that's kind of because that's how we, you know, found out about you was seeing your engagement with the community via Motherload. Do you mind telling us a bit about that and maybe that kind of that switch that you've made from kind of engaging as a professional to having to, you know, encompass parenting and encompass this very personal experience you've had of bringing up, you know, the next generation in music and how those two things work together.
And I'll even add to Liz's question by saying that we've got really great visual indicators of you in that parenting / music world, like through your Facebook page, for example, where you actively have got pictures of kids around you, or there's a great photo that I love of you playing guitar and having a baby, I'm assuming your baby.
Yes,
strapped on in. Yes.
Hang on, this isn't even my baby.
Somebody's baby.
That's how early you teach them. You just found a baby on the street.
No, that is my son, yes.
You've got some self-awareness about this and even just, promoting the fact, not really hiding the fact that you're doing this juggle. So, yeah, to hijack Liz's question, please respond.
Well, ladies, where do I begin? Motherload has been a long time coming and I had thought about doing like a live event Q&A like years ago because, you know, you would see occasionally you'd read an article or there'd be a well-known musician who's had a baby and they'll talk about their experience. And their experience is absolutely valid if they're, you know, signed to a major label or maybe they've got a massive audience, they're independent but they've got, you know, 30,000 followers on Instagram or something like that. Of course their experience is valid, but for me I was like, yeah, but like how? Like, okay, I my gigs don't earn enough for me to be paying to have a nanny come along on tour with me or, you know, whatever. Like how do the small gals make it happen? How do we work it out? And I just noticed that we were, you know, when I caught up with my friends that had kids when we were doing a show together, you know, it'd be like, oh, how do you do this? And, you know, how do you do that? When I went on tour a few years ago, Jess Green, who's a jazz guitarist from Canberra, plays pop music under the name, her own pop music under the name Fino. And she had her, oh, how old was he, like 6 months or something there for the tour. And so we were taking some of the other ladies and I were taking turns sort of rocking him backstage while she was playing. And I feel like there's a conversation that happens in green rooms. And there's a lot of knowledge that must be out there. And so I really wanted to try and democratize that and make it easily accessible. And then with everything that happened with lockdown and I think a few people have noticed that the lockdown experience is very similar to early motherhood. You know, you can't leave the house. You've got kids at your feet.
Good point. That was me.
And so a lot of musician mothers do filming or like practice videos and put them up, or they do little live streams, because that's the way that they can remain connected to people is through the internet. So I felt like there was a lot of gold there to be gathered, and then I can't remember what happened. I just snapped and went, that's it, I'm doing it.
Take advantage of your socials. Just put it out there. Anyone, please respond. And tell our listeners about the kind of response that you did get to this call out to take part in your informal survey.
So the informal survey was really something, because I know what I want to hear, and I want to hear practical stuff. Okay, so how do you manage the financials? How do you deal with, you know, you've had a long break from performing, perhaps? How do you get back in there? How do you build community? How? Mm. The biggest response I got back was for self-care, which shows me that people are burnt out and they're tired, which, you know, I don't think we really needed a survey to tell us that, but it was good to hear. Essentially, I wanted to know, to make sure that I wasn't just going to be biased about what is useful information for musician mothers, and rather focus on what actually everyone wants to know. But also I was putting in some grant applications, so I wanted to be able to, show that there was that need and to express what topics were most wanted. So up there was self-care, number one by a long stretch. Also, social media management when you don't have a lot of time. You know, it's sometimes you're like, I know I should be posting about something, but I don't want to take a selfie right now because I've got up at 4.
Yeah.
So how do you just kind of keep that rolling? Then there was an option for people to write comments, and that was quite full on for me to read, because I just got a lot of, I guess I got a wave of quite emotional things, like people saying, you know, I feel like an imposter. I haven't played music, you know, publicly with my band because I just feel like so anxious about being in gig setting, in a pub setting, like all these fears and these questions. It was emotional to read it, but it was also, I think, really, affirmed that yes, there is a need for some kind of resource. I don't know how it's going to evolve, but yeah.
It's interesting too, you mentioned self-care, like being musicians as a form of self-care, or self-care as being something that they need to do from the music industry, if you know what
yes,
I mean.
Yes, I think the latter. So,
okay.
I mean, maybe I should have added a sub question, but I think I said self care for musician mums.
Yeah,
and that was the one that received the most interest. But what I'm gathering from that is, I assume I'm not the only one, that I feel like there's room in my life for three things, you know, family, career, and self care. Well, there's three things, like looking after myself, looking after my family, looking after my career, but there's only space for two, you know? Right. And I feel like if I'm taking care of my family and looking after my career, it means that I'm staying up till 4 in the morning and burning the candle at both ends, or I'm dropping the ball on the family, or, you know, so I guess how to manage that when you don't have a team.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a manager that can send out the press releases for you.
That's right. It's all up to you, isn't it, when you're an independent musician?
That's right. And I think that is the majority of people's experience, really. Like there's a few of the, you know, your Claire Bowditch and your Missy Higgins and things like that. And I count those women as my friends. I'm no shade, but just it's a different experience.
100%.
We're listening to music mothers.
Another.
Was there something in particular that you've found now, Georgia? What advice would you give industry? Like if you had the ear of the minister, or if you had the ear of the head of APRA, or if you had the ear of somebody really important in industry, what would you tell them that they needed to do to make this industry more family friendly or parent friendly, or what, you know, what would you tell them from the experience and the information you've gathered so far? What would you tell them to do?
One of the early catalysts for Motherlode, before I knew that it was called Motherlode, was I went into Triple R and Tin Pan Orange were playing. You know, Emily Lubitz, she's mm-hmm. the singer from that group. They're beautiful, and we were chatting, and she said, "Oh, I think I was talking about Grants. I hadn't met her before. We were just sort of, I think we had a mutual friend, and you know what it's like in music in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But we were chatting, and she said, "Oh, we need a breastfeeding grant fund." And I was like, "What?"
Yes.
She's like, "Well, just imagine if you had a fund that you could apply to tour, and you know that when you're explaining, I need to take a support person with me because I'm bringing my family, or you know, that's sort of just included in it or something." And I was like, mind blown.
Yeah.
So I feel like I should think about this in case I'm ever in an elevator with someone, you know, and you got your elevator pitch and get it done. Yeah. I don't have the answers, I guess, for the more strategic or the more systematic things, because I feel like it's all interconnected with, you know, patriarchy and misogyny and, you know, the lack of support overall for women in any industry and lack of, you know, accessible childcare, and all of those big picture things are going to affect and trickle down into, you know, any industry really. I think music is tougher than some because it's already, you know, very unregulated. You've got, you know, the gig economy, you've got cash economy,
nighttime economy, which is no good for sleeping babies.
That's right. And it's, it was unstable before COVID. So, I feel like I don't want Motherlode to just put a band-aid on what the bigger problems, but it also I feel like there's just immediate kind of mum-to-mum help that could be offered. Like, "Oh, guys, did you know this grant is closing tomorrow?" Or, you know. Actually, one thing that was interesting is that Bakehouse, who are a rehearsal studio in Melbourne, were offering, and I missed the application because I was distracted by my family life, were offering like rehearsal rooms for female musicians for free. So you could like apply and they would give you, I don't know if it was a month or 2 months or 3 months or something, but you'd have a space to go. That would be useful, I think, for musician mothers, if there was some kind of funding for a space, because a lot of us don't have a space within the home.
Yeah.
We get constantly interrupted.
Yeah, that's Helen and her wonderful team at Bakehouse. Yes. We love them. Yes, yeah. She's it's interesting amazing. Too, isn't it, that that's a woman. I mean, I know that she's not the only person there, but, you know, that you've got a kind of, it's not quite that empathy, but it kind of is, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, because we can say, you know, that question's always a bit tricky, because if it's mothers for mothers, then the flip side is that dudes have been having kids for however long and it's just been accepted that they leave them, or if they bring them, that, you know, somebody else is there, like it just, so it is a gendered problem. But you're right, there are uniquely female issues, shall we say, that, you know, systemically we need to kind of address. And yeah something like that's a really interesting point. And as I look around now, I just think, I don't even have in my house as I'm sitting here, I don't have one little space that's mine.
No.
That's not shared with somebody, you know.
And when you're making music as well, or you're creating sounds, you need to have that private space, don't you? It's not just like coming, you know, devising songs. It's actually, if you want to record it or lay down a bit of an idea, sometimes you just need that peace and quiet with you know, to get the sound right, or to get the idea right, or not to get a, "Mum, please can I have a Vegemite sandwich? Yes. I know dinner's only half an hour away, but I really want it." You know,
totally.
just that shared brain of like, I'm half parenting and I'm half doing something for myself, but I'm not 100% doing anything.
Anything, yeah.
Just compromising the whole time.
Totally. Yep, that's my motto.
Yeah. We're not going to weep gently. Don't mind us. If you're sobbing while you're listening to this, dear listener, we love you. We know.
Yes.
Yeah,
we hear you on that one. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, Georgia, we would like to hear about the music that's happening in your house at the moment. So we would love you to finish the Music Mothers Another Sentence for us. The kids and I are listening to
The kids and I are listening to Tumblebee by Laura Veers.
Oh.
It's a beautiful record by indie songwriter Laura Veers, and she's playing traditional folk songs. So you get to hear her beautiful voice. There's some cute little rhymes for the kids, and it's a gateway drug into her other material. So now my daughter's into, you know, into Laura Veers and loves it when I put on her non-children record, which is always good. And the other one she loves is Sally Seltman. Just straight up Sally Seltman. Hey Daydreamer, huge, huge, big fan.
My daughter was obsessed with 1, 2, 3, 4, the Sesame Street version for a very long time.
Yes.
And then when we went back and went back and went back, that's, I love how you describe it as a gateway drug. It's true.
Yeah.
It's how we get them, hook them in.
Oh, that's right. I think like her first album was at The Last Beautiful Day. Anyway, we still listen to that at home as well. And then, of course, she has connections to the Avalanches. So we go on this kind of like roundabout circular thing of getting into like Since I Left You album.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely. But I mean, I hear you when you say, you know, a female voice. Lovely rhymes, the idea of an artist, the artist that you've mentioned before. And I actually don't know that artist. Could you remind us of her name?
Laura Veers.
We'll put her in your Spotify. We always make a Spotify playlist for our guests.
Oh, cool,
so we'll find
her.
We'll put her in for you. Yeah.
She just did one album of folk songs, like traditional old folk songs.
Well, I was going to say it's been so delightful having you here, Georgia Fields, on Music Mothers and Others. We've really had a great time, haven't we?
Yeah, thank you so much.
It was really lovely to chat. Thank you.
You're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
I am the hood and the hunter.
Music, Mothers and Others is written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt and edited by Nina Longfellow. We're broadcast on 2SER and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. Visit us on Instagram and Facebook to find out who our upcoming guests will be. See you next time.